Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's beunique.org.
Marion, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Mary.
Hallelujah. Oh, man. I just had to start a new live show, and we're just going to pick up where we left off. I'll worry about all the background stuff and the tagging that I'm just, you know, we're here. Thank you. I'm hoping Jennifer might call in, and because she adds so much to our shows, and I'd love to have her. I have no idea where we left off before. Did you hear? You know what? I'm just going to find it and play it again. Christian's little story.
Well,
I love it.
Oh, did you hear it?
I'd
love to hear that.
This is Christian.
No, I didn't.
Reading for Be Unique magazine. My first encounter with Green Gables was on a field trip when I was in fifth grade.
Yes.
I love history, so attending this was an honor. Our teacher, Mrs. Ambrose, was as excited as I was. We would make real soap and play games from the time when Green Gables was first built in the 1800s. We would also tour the house itself, seeing where the family would relax, sleep, eat, play, and host guests. When we arrived at Green Gables, we met the conservation president, John Daly. He introduced the monument to us and told us a bit of its history. I was fascinated as we began with our first activity, making honey and goat milk soap. Apart from the modern convenience and time saving of using frames in a microwave to finalize the project, it was a process much like the Wells family used so many years before. We then played some games, like hoop racing and marbles, just like the family's children would have done so long ago. Finally, we toured the house. In its present state, Green Gables may not be much to look at from the outside. The inside is shown as aged well. There are efforts underway to raise money to help save, restore, and preserve Green Gables and keep it as a piece of history in Brevard County. It provides a fun place to go for field trips, and a lot can be learned about history when you see it with your own eyes. We have much to learn from our past, and too many of our local historic buildings have been destroyed or lost. If Green Gables isn't conserved, it could well become another gas station, parking lot, or condo. Another one of Florida's historic monuments would be gone forever. Recently, I took part in a live nativity event at Green Gables and played the part of a shepherd. I feel it was a bit of fate that I got to play that part, because I feel that I am one of the many shepherds of Green Gables, watching out and trying to protect it. Green Gables has earned many of my teachers' hearts and their efforts of conservation as well. The whole community is coming together to help preserve and protect this piece of history in our backyard. I'll continue to help in any way I can. I will help stand up for Green Gables. For Be Unique Magazine, I am Christian Vine. Thank you very much for listening.
Is he amazing?
He is such a sweetheart.
Oh my gosh, he is a smart little guy, and he is personable, and you can, his emotions run deep, you know, and you can see he really means what he says. I expect to be reading a novel of his someday.
Oh, definitely, and I intend to be his editor.
Oh, that would be fantastic. I've had him in class, and I run the school post office, and he was one of my best post office employees. He's just a very dedicated
Really?
Man. Yes. Yes.
That's so funny. He's got an old soul, I think.
I think so too.
But you know, a lot of the children that I met there seem very in tune with history and with the old house, and I couldn't get over it. I mean, there were kindergartners there that were just having a blast.
Yep. I have to say, our experience with children that came, whether they came from public school, private school, homeschool groups, they all seem to catch that spirit when they're at Green Gables.
Yes.
They're not all as articulate about it as Christian is, but they'll, you know, John Daly told me once with one of the tours that came through, and I believe it was either a kindergarten or first grade, very young. And one of the kids turned around to him and said, "This is so much better than reading it in the book."
Oh.
And John said, "Yeah, it is. You know, you experience it instead of just reading it." She said, "Now I understand." So, you know, just that, like, out of the mouth of babes. He was just shocked that a kid that young would, you know, would be able to pick up on that. But that, I guess, it appeals to you know, all ages.
I think so. It does.
Yeah.
Well,
but, yeah.
I was hoping that Jennifer would join us. She's trying to get into the show. We're really having all kinds of issues here tonight because I was talking and I wasn't sure what was being heard and what wasn't being heard. But you know what? It's okay. We're here now. We're talking and... Our little birdie told me earlier that you got a substantial donation recently.
We did.
Oh, dear.
We had a wonderful gentleman who I didn't know sent me a message saying that he'd like to make a donation. And I said, okay, have you seen the house? And he said, well, I'd like to come and see it again and talk to you. So we made an appointment for the next day, and my vice president, Sue Fallon, met me there, and we, you know, we set up coffee on the porch, coffee and bagels, and we were ready, you know, for our visit. And he came, and he couldn't believe that we had real china out, and we, you know, we were fussing over him. And so he made what he did was he made a matching pledge promise, so that he will match the pledges that are made at the premiere up to $5,000.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is wonderful.
Yeah, very, very generous and very concerned man. He asked a million questions and was very, very interested in the house. He happens to own an old house.
Oh, that's cool. But hold up a second. Jennifer's
yes.
just telling me that she can't find this episode. It's almost 10 o'clock at night, and I don't think anybody's hearing it.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, and I know you have to go to work tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Do you want me to try to set up another show later tonight? I mean, we could be recording. I'm not sure what's happening, but Jennifer can't find the show. Let me look real quick on Facebook and see if it, because I shared it and I thought, okay, well, this will be great. We'll just share it and go from there. I put it on Green Gables. And I just want to make sure that, I mean, if people can't hear it, it's kind of like no good to have it. So, I mean, I love talking with you. That's a bonus. All right, this is take two. Let's see what happens. No, it's working. It's working. So we're good.
Okay.
I'll direct Jennifer to that page and see if that works.
Okay.
All right, continue. Keep talking. I'm sorry. I hated to interrupt you. But
no, that's okay.
I want everybody to know what's happening.
Yeah, there's so many good things. We're kind of like on a roll. All of a sudden, the momentum has picked up. And we're getting more volunteers. We just got some new volunteers that came Helped. We have our director of operations is Gene Alberson, and
I love Gene. I met him.
Oh my God, he's our Pied Piper. Yeah, he's amazing. Such a positive person.
Yes.
Always smiling, always supportive. Just a lovely, lovely man. And one of the things that I've really wanted to do is do some clearing, because we have a lot of overgrown areas. Out on the back of the property. And so he got two volunteers that called and said, we want to come help do some yard work. Well, they went to town. You can actually,
I saw those pictures on Facebook.
Yeah. You can see the house now. It's not as hit. We had the property cleared before and you could see the house from US-1, but now you can see all of the house from US-1. So we're going to continue to do that. We're going to clear down by the river because on the 4th of July, we invite people to come and bring their lawn chairs and sit because we have a perfect view of the bridge where the town fireworks go off.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, we've done it 2 years now, and people just really enjoy it because it's a nice, quiet place. We have reserved parking, and they can just park, and because otherwise you're driving all over town trying to find some place to park. And then they can sit and watch the fireworks. So we're going to clear out the river so you can see them better, but also so that people on the river can see the house as well. So one of our dreams, we have a lot of dreams. One of our dreams is to have a trolley, the Green Gables
uh-huh.
trolley that would go all downtown and live at Green Gables, but make it, you know, a circle of the historic area and the library and Wells Park. And then the second dream is to build a dock that like they used to have. They used to have a dock because we're on a bluff. You can't just walk down to the water.
Exactly.
So if we build a dock, and then I would love to contract the there's a paddle boat in Cocoa Village. I would love to contract them to come to Green Gables and pick up tours and bring them down to Cocoa Beach and back, you know, make it like a circular route. And people would be able to just come to Green Gables and get on the boat and take a tour of the Indian River. So we've got a lot of dreams for down the road. And it just would be such an ideal place for families and children to go and enjoy themselves. So
it is. And, you know, you talked about clearing. When I lived in Melbourne for many years, and I would drive up and down that road, and I never knew Green Gables was there. I didn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad. Yeah. I'm so glad that Jean was able to get some volunteers to help, because every time, I mean, I haven't been there that often, but the few times that I've been there, I've always seen him out there piddling around in the garden. And
yes.
What I love about Green Gables is it's bringing the entire community together.
Yes. Yes, it is. We're getting more and more people of all different ages. We have a lot of young people that volunteer. They start off coming because they need community service hours for school, either for college or for high school to get their Bright Future scholarship. But then their hours, they get their hours, their time is up, and they still keep coming.
Well,
so
that's really
just
cool.
Yeah, yeah, they become attached to it just like we are. And it's just wonderful, you know. We have a volunteer now named Nick, and he's just awesome. Just a really, really nice young man, high school age. I think he's a senior. And he's just always willing to do anything that we ask. And you don't even have to ask. He'll come up behind you and say, I'll take that for you, or I'll do that for you. Just, you know, it's so nice to see young people that are willing to just chip in and help and be thoughtful and get involved with us. And then we have
our two
high school girls that come. We have three, actually, high school-age girls that are in the documentary. And they just look beautiful in their costumes.
Oh, my gosh,
and,
yes.
Yes.
And,
so
and
they did beautifully.
I talked to both. Well, the two that come regularly, I talked to them, and they were, I asked them, I said, so what made you come here for the, you know, the first time? And they said, well, I needed community hours for my scholarship. And I said, oh, so how many hours do you need? And they, one of them said, oh, I got all the hours I need. I'm still coming here because I love it.
Yes, yes.
And the house does that. It makes you fall in love. Could you tell our audience, if they haven't all quit on me, I can't apologize enough for whatever happened, but it was out of my control. Anyway, I would like for you to tell about the Wells family and some of the things that they did for the local community. And first of all, why I was starting on this when I was trying to figure out if I was even on the air or not. But what brought them to Melbourne?
Well, Mrs. Wells was experiencing trouble with the cold weather in the winter. She was getting pneumonia every year.
Mm.
And so they had a beautiful home up in the Lake George area. And that's a very cold area. It gets a lot of snow. So the doctor advised her to winter someplace warmer. So they traveled and they looked at different places. They went to St. Augustine. They went down to West Palm. They looked all over. And when they came to Melbourne, they found that the people were super friendly. And Mr. Wells felt that, you know, these are people I could work with. There were only 100 families in Melbourne at the time. But he met them and he liked them. And Mrs. Wells loved the area. She loved the people. And they both loved sports, especially boating and fishing. And at that time, the Indian River was crystal clear. And it was filled with fish. Mr. Wells said that there were so many fish in there, you don't even need a fishing pole. You can just reach down and grab one, which was an exaggeration, but it just goes to show you how, you know. And then we have pictures at the house of them fishing and the huge fish that they pulled out of the river. And, of course, they're all dressed up. You know, in those days, they didn't put on their shorts and a T-shirt. The men are all wearing suits, and the ladies are wearing those big dresses and big hats, you know, to go fishing. So it's wonderful to be able to look through all that. We have Green Gables was the most photographed house. It was on the list of the top 10 places to save because there's so much history there and so much evidence of the history.
And it's so different from most houses.
Yes, yes, because it started
it
when they first came. The artisans here, the craftsmen, did not know how to build anything but a four-square house. So that's what they did. They built a four-square house. And it was Mr. Wells who brought other artisans in that kind of showed them how to do the Queen Anne Tower and the octagon porch and the bay windows so that houses that were built after Green Gables benefited from him bringing these other artisans and teaching the local craftsmen how to do it. So houses after Green Gables were able to be much more beautiful. And Green Gables was beautiful to begin with, but it became even more beautiful as they expanded it. And so they built it and with great foresight because Mr. Wells wired it for electricity in 1896 because they had electricity up north. He knew it would be coming. So he had it wired for electricity. And that was 10 years before actual electricity came when the ice plant was built. And they brought electricity to Melbourne. He also put a lot of storage in the house. Almost every room has a closet, and that really doesn't happen in old Victorian homes. They don't have a lot of storage. And they bought a lot of things. They traveled a great deal, so they brought a lot of things back in their travels. When you walk into our reception room, you'll see on the, going up the staircase and on the, both sides of the entryway, they brought hand-carved teak back from India. And decorated with that, and it's just gorgeous. You look at it, you can't believe that it's wood. So they have a lot of touches like that in the house.
And it's one piece. Each little piece is like one carving. It's beautiful.
Yes.
I've seen it, and I hope that our listeners will go to the greengables.org, and from there they can click over to the Facebook page for the Forgotten Enchantress film. And see all these pictures of
link on our page that right on the www.greengables.org there is a link right to Forgotten Enchantress. You can view the trailer.
And
you
can see all those
buy tickets. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And then also, if you're interested in the old photos, you can get them from that page too.
Yes, they are in there too, and I think they're just they're amazing. I don't know how they were preserved so well, because I know that house went through several, a century worth of hurricanes.
Yes, and it's still standing. You know, when you see all these other homes that have been torn apart, and it's right on the river, with just that little barrier island between it and the ocean. So
the first day that we were there filming, we saw dolphins in the river.
Yes, that's not uncommon. We see that a lot, and we see birds of every type. We have an osprey that comes every day and sits up in our branches, and most days it brings a fish and drops a fish down for us. It's almost like it's trying to give us a gift every day.
Kind of like a cat bringing you a mouse.
Exactly, exactly.
That's really neat.
The first time we thought it was just an accident.
And he doesn't fly down and pick it up and go away?
No, he just leaves it there.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
I want to make
sure.
But
we had woodpeckers.
I want to talk about the live, you know, the flora and fauna. We probably need Jean here to talk about the flora. But I want to talk about that a little bit more. But before, just in case the show gets weird again, I want to make sure we already know the website is greengables.org. And they can link from there to the Facebook page for Forgotten Enchantress Film. But what I want you to do is tell them about all the screenings that we're going to have. How many places are we going to be showing this film and where?
We're going to be, the Oaks is first on Saturday night at 6
o'clock. And that's in Melbourne, Florida.
That's in Melbourne, Florida. And then we have the Brevard Cinema House, which is in Cocoa. And we will have three different showings there on January 25th. And that's a lovely place. It's a it was bought by Nuno owners, and it's been updated, and they sell food. So we're not providing food at that one. But you can buy all sorts of food there while you're enjoying the film. So we'll have three showings there.
But you're providing food at the first one?
We have a champagne and hors d'oeuvre reception upstairs if you purchase a silver or gold level ticket.
Those are for your VIP levels.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
You have reserved seating, and with the gold ticket you get a red carpet picture taken, and you know, each level has its own perks, and that's all on our webpage. If you click on it, they'll give you the different levels, and on brown paper tickets as well. You go to brownpapertickets.com and you can purchase any of the three levels.
Okay.
And then after the Brevard Cinema House, we're going to have a showing at the Intracoastal Brewery in O'Galley. We will put,
when is that?
Yeah, we're going to publish. We don't know yet. We're meeting with them. They've offered it to us. They sought us out and made that offer. So we're thrilled that they're going to be so generous and let us do a showing there.
That's awesome.
Sue Fallon and I are meeting with them on Wednesday, and we'll set everything up. And then we will have another showing at Holy Name, and that will be in February, I believe, the first or second Sunday. But we'll have all those dates on our webpage. We're still working the details out for those. But,
and Holy Name is in Satellite Beach, right?
It's in Indy Atlantic. It's right if you go over the O'Galley Causeway. You'll find Walmart. You turn right at Walmart, and there's a little development next door, and we're right next door to that development. So we're right on A1A in Indy Atlantic. And that's going to be in the Life Center, and that holds about 300 people. So it'll be open to, you know, anybody that wants to come. And the fourth graders want to support us, so they're going to sell probably root beer floats and popcorn at that one.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So, yeah. They
That's
want to do
really
something
cool.
Else, so. Yeah. So that's what we have planned so far, and then we'll see where that takes us.
I think think it's going to take you right to about $286,000.
That would be wonderful. That would be wonderful.
It's going to happen. I'm going to be like that.
Yes.
Have you ever watched the show, the movie Waterboy? With Adam Sandler was in it, and his girlfriend says, "No, I'm not making a prediction. I'm telling you how it is." So I'm telling you how it is.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt. I think it's just because people haven't heard of us, and once they do, and especially the people that come and visit us, they'll feel the same way. They'll recognize the value.
It's a very contagious project, because we had mentioned this earlier on the other show that got just snapped away from us. You and Sue met Jennifer, me, and Tyrell on Cita and Friends show.
Cita
Biggie. Mm-hmm. I was trying to remember what her other name was, because she says I have three names and I always forget one, but I shouldn't even try that. But it is a radio show in Cocoa, Florida. And when we met you, Jennifer and I, when we talked about you, when the show was over, I think we all gathered out in the lobby and talked. But then we left the radio show, and Jennifer and I still talked. And she said that she and Tyrell talked about it all the way back to Orlando. And she started immediately thinking, what can we do? How can we make this happen? So we were thinking and brainstorming, and once she came up with the idea, I think it took her about a month to say, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, and making just absolute cinematography magic.
Yes.
And because she told me about it, and I know she went to visit you. I was supposed to go that first day, and I don't remember what my ailment was. I think I had the flu. I was very ill, and I didn't want to be around anybody. So I stayed home, and while you and Jennifer were eating lavender cookies and tea, and chicken soup, I think. But she came back from that on fire, and she said, "Mary, you've got to go see this place. I can't tell you what it's about or what it's like. It's just amazing." And everybody, all of our film people, and there was Jennifer and Donnie and Franklin. Lynn was there. I was there. Tony was there for one day. And then we had Aisha.
And Aisha came to visit.
And then, oh my gosh, when Elisa came, the psychic.
She's so amazing.
She is just an amazing human. Everybody that I know that has been to that house can't stop talking about it and can't stop thinking about, I wish I had $285,000. I'd give it to you right now. I don't know how many times people have said that, but we don't necessarily need one person with, $250,000. We could have $250,000 people with $1, or we can have several thousand people with $100. And I don't want anybody to think, oh my gosh, my little money won't help.
If everybody in Brevard County gave $1, we could do it. That would be it.
Absolutely. You have a program for pledging. Tell our listeners how that works.
What they would do is they would sign a pledge. They would get a pledge where they would put how much they want to pledge, and they don't have to give us any money now. And when we meet, when we get to the point where we have enough pledges to meet our goal to get the matching grant, that's when they would have to give us the money that they pledged. And this gives them the confidence that, well, if anything were to happen, which it's not, but if anything were to happen that we could not meet our goal, then they wouldn't have to give us a penny. The pledge would be null and void if we passed that April deadline without raising enough money.
Right.
So they can be confident that they're not giving money, and if anything happened, they wouldn't get it back.
They don't have to worry about.
Yes. We also have a donation program, which if you donate $1,000 or more, we'll put it just like the pledges, that it we'll put it right in our bank account. And if not if, because it's not going to happen, but if it were to happen that we didn't meet our goal, then you would get that money back. So there's two different ways to do it. You can pledge, or you can donate. And both of them
gives
different.
It gives the bigger donors confidence.
Yeah.
You know, especially if someone's donating $5,000 or even $1,000.
Yes.
I say those numbers so cavalierly, like, oh, it's nothing. But even if someone wanted to donate $500, it's a lot of money
to
them.
Yes. Yes. And
it doesn't
we have
matter
people.
If you want to donate $5.
Yep. We have some people that give us every month. They send us a donation. And one of them
need.
It's $5 a month. And another one gives us $10 a month. And we have a few that give us $100 a month. So and they have been what kept us going because of our operating costs. It costs to keep Green Gables running, the taxes are $14,000 a year. So we pay that. We pay for a termite bond. We pay insurance for the house and for the board. We have portalettes on the property. We have somebody that comes and mows the lawn at an incredibly low price, but we still have to pay them. So all those expenses come up to about $1,600 a month. So a lot of our events and efforts go to sustaining, you know, because when we signed the agreement with the owners that we would try to save it, we took on all of the expenses of the house. So that's what's made it slow going, because all the work that we do, we're trying to put as much as we can aside. And you're still going to start seeing, we have a thermometer on our page, and you can see where we are, and it already has started to rise. Anne does our page. She hasn't updated it yet, but next time you look at it, it's going to be higher because we've already gotten some pledges.
Oh, that's amazing.
That is
so good. Because, you know, it takes – a lot of us are visual learners, and we need to see that we're doing something that makes a difference.
Yes.
And something like this project is not like giving a homeless person a bag lunch and saying, here you go, and you get to see them eating their lunch. This is for the long haul. It's the big picture kind of thing.
Yes.
Yes. I just had someone ask me through text if you would share your favorite Green Gables story.
Do you have so many? No, I have many, many Green Gables stories. But let's see. I think my favorite Green Gables story is, I have two different ones. So my favorite one is having to do with a child that came to the house when we were doing the education program, and it was a child that I didn't know. It came from home. She came from a homeschool group, and I was taking her upstairs. I was taking the little group of them upstairs, and I said, you know, look how narrow these stairs are. They're very small. I said, because people were smaller back then. And, you know, I said they didn't have the same nutrition. They didn't have hormones in the food. There were different reasons, but people were actually smaller. And we have a lot of costumes hanging up in the house, and they say, oh, that's really small. So they get it. And as we're walking up the stairs, she said to me, you know, I'm small too, and I feel like I'm walking up with one of them. And I said, well, you know, maybe in spirit you are, because in a house like this, you can feel history. And when you feel it, you become part of it. And so she was so excited that she felt like she was part of history walking up those stairs. So the first place we go to when we go upstairs is the trunk room. And we walked into the trunk room. So now she's imagining that she is part of the family. And we walked into the trunk room, and they couldn't believe that they didn't use suitcases, that they use these big trunks to travel with. And so she said, I'm going to ask my mom if I can have a trunk. You know, she really, she got so into it. She wanted to be a part of that house. So that really made me realize that children are so open. They're so open to feelings of people from the past and things like that. So that really, it touched my heart. So I think that's my favorite story, because I saw, that was the first time I saw how the house could affect a child. And being a teacher, that, you know, children are my life. So
yeah,
it made me feel very, very good. And then my second story is my own experience. I was unaware of the house. I've lived in Melbourne for 40 years, and I did not know anything about the house. I had never seen it, and I drove past there all the time.
You never went down that street?
I never. I drove up US 1, but I.
Yeah.
But so when one of the women in my club came back to the club and said, you know, I went to an open house at this old house, and did you know that the lady that built it, she was one of the first presidents of our club, and I thought, wow, that's pretty interesting. So I think I'll go and check it out. And just curiosity, I just wanted to walk through the house. And as soon as I walked up those steps, I felt something. I walked in the house, and that was it. And that's where the word enchanted comes from in the film, because I walked in and I was totally enchanted. And once I walked through, I really felt that this was such a special place with such character and history. And that I couldn't help it. I wanted to be a part of saving it. And so I offered to help. And I didn't join, but I offered to help. They were getting ready to put on a harvest festival. And I said, you know what, Melbourne Women's Club will step in and we will help you. And so we did. We helped with the full festival, and it was very successful. And by the end of that festival, these people were my family. So I joined immediately. And they asked me to be on the board, so I was on the board. And then within a few months, I was John Daly decided to retire as president, and I became president. And that's the way it's been ever since. So that experience.
You touched on something, because I felt that sense of family also.
Yes.
It was just an amazing feeling.
Mhm. And you know what? My husband teases me and says that I live there, but when I leave it, I miss it. I really miss. You know, if
you know,
I come home. I
Jennifer was recently interviewed by Florida Today with her role as a filmmaker in Forgotten
mm-hmm.
Enchantress. And that was something she said, that when she's away too long, she misses the house.
Yep, you do. It becomes a part of you. I write, and I go there a lot and sit on the porch and do my writing, because it's just such a serene place, and it's just a comfortable, easygoing place. You feel the breeze off the river and all the nature around you, and it's just a wonderful place to go and write. And I know Gene goes there, and he plays his recorder. He'll go there and sit on the porch and play his recorder, even though there's nobody there. It's the same type of feeling that, you know, you're home.
Yeah, there's very, very much a familiarity about that place. I think it's on a cellular level. I can't understand how else to explain it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was very different from where I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where the houses were all attached, and you know, I did not grow up in a place like Green Gables, like a big rim. I grew up in a little bungalow, so
mm-hmm.
I don't understand why I feel like this place is home, but I do, I really do. And I think the rest of our team feels the same way.
Oh, I'm sure they do, because I've heard them say things like that.
Yeah.
I want to take a real quick little break here, and we've got a little over 5 minutes left. When we come back, I want to talk about the Wells family a little more.
Okay.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together. Change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Welcome back, everybody. We are with Marian Ambrose talking about Forgotten Enchantress. This is the name of a film that Be Unique Productions and Green Gables at Historic Riverview Village created in a collaborative fashion. But this is not by any means your little back of your camera viewing. This is something truly artistic and truly amazing. And the purpose for this film is to bring awareness about the plight of Green Gables, the house that is 123 years old, because we are saving this house. We are raising $285,000 to match for $500,000, which will then be applied toward the $1 million price tag to buy this property to keep it as a viable piece of Americana and a community center and an educational center, a place for kids to play, as well as a beautiful ecosystem. And we've been talking about that in two different shows tonight because we had technical difficulties with the first one. But we're back, and I want Marian to use some of the rest of her time telling us a little bit about Nora and William Wells and their family and who has lived in this house.
Well, the Wells family lived upstate New York in the Lake George area, and very wealthy people. Mr. Wells was an industrialist, and he patented a process to make rustless iron, which made him very, very wealthy. Nora Wells is Nora Stanford Wells of the Stanford University family. That was her uncle, and her father was a New York State senator. So she was a very wealthy socialite, and they married, and they had three children, two boys and a girl, and eventually Mrs. Wells' health started to suffer in the winter. Lake George gets very cold in the winter. They get a lot of snow, and so the doctor recommended that they winter someplace warmer. So they decided to come down to Florida and look around and see where they might like to build a home, and they went to St. Augustine, they went to West Palm, they went to Tampa, they went all the places that you would think. And then they happened to come through Melbourne, and they said the people were so friendly that they were very impressed by it. And Mr. Wells felt that these were people that he could work with. And so they decided to build here. And an added incentive for them, they loved sports, especially water sports. And they saw this property on the river, and the Indian River at that time was crystal clear and just teeming with fish. And so being a sportsman, Mr. Wells thought this is the place to be. So they purchased the property. They purchased, I believe it was 150 acres at the time. And at one time they owned almost from Ogalle to Pombe. They owned a great deal of land. And they donated much of it to the city, quite a bit of it to the city. They built the first auditorium. And they brought in all sorts of talent. They brought opera singers and plays and things like that to bring culture to the area. Mrs. Wells started with a little book club in her house. She had a library in her home that she allowed everybody to come and borrow books. And then it became so popular that they decided to build a real library. So they built the first permanent library. And then they also built, they rented a building downtown and paid the salary of a teacher so that Melbourne had a high school, because up until then they did not have a high school.
Wow.
So they did all this, and they donated quite a bit of land. We actually have Wells Park downtown Melbourne, which is land that was donated by the Wells family. They were members of Holy Trinity Church, and they helped financially. They helped have the church moved from its location to its present location and built the new church, funded the building of the new church. So they really got involved in the community right away. And one of our docents, John Daly, likes when he does his tours, he likes to say a lot of the business of Melbourne was probably conducted sitting on our octagon porch over tea, because it was really a center of the community. And a lot of the families, you know, the founding families, like the Platts and the Meehans and the Goods, they all donated and worked hard to build Melbourne into the place it is today. And I imagine that they did meet and talk about, you know, what should we do or how would we do this. And it may very well have happened right on our porch. So that's another endearing quality that we have for the house. So they did all these things. And they became very involved in the community and very, very beloved of the community. You'll read the newspaper articles at the time, and they just loved to tell everything that, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Wells entertained these people or that people. He built the Carlton Hotel, which was a lovely hotel down where the Melbourne Causeway is right now. And he used to entertain there. They built a bluff walk that went down from, it started at Green Gables and it ended at the Carlton Hotel. And then he wanted to make things a little more convenient, so he built Riverview Drive, which is the road that goes around, it curves around from the Melbourne Causeway and right to Green Gables. So that was built originally by Mr. Wells. So they just brought so much and donated so much to the community that we owe them a great debt.
And we're paying them back.
Mr. Wells, yes, that's part of what we want to do. And not just to pay them back and honor them, but to honor all of the early families. Because,
well,
By
the money you're going to raise and the awareness you're going to raise with Forgotten Enchantress, you're going to be able to pay the Wells family back and pay the community forward.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think when you realize that there are only three examples of Queen Anne architecture left in our area, one of them is the Strawberry Mansion, and it has been converted into like a restaurant and a wine cellar. The other one is Gleason House, and
mm-hmm.
the Gleason House is absolutely beautifully restored, but it is a private home now, so you can't tour it. You can't go through
and see the architecture.
Right. So Melbourne, in this area, Melbourne, O'Galley, Coco, Green Gables is the house to visit and save. Rossiter House is beautiful. Rossiter House is in O'Galley. But the last Mrs. Rossiter left an endowment to carry that on in perpetuity. She donated it to the city, and it has money put away to keep it going in perpetuity. So that's one of the advantages that they had, which helped them to keep it looking beautiful and pristine and carry on. Green Gables didn't have that advantage because as it passed down through the family, because only direct descendants have lived in the house, and they lived there till 2004 hurricanes.
Mm,
and that's when they
that
had to move
out. That was a
rough
year.
Yeah. And then it sat vacant, and some vagrants moved in and did some damage, and it got overgrown.
Oh.
And you know, the family has been very generous and very supportive. You know, people say, well, why didn't they just give it to you? Well, it's passed down through generations, and now several people have an interest in the home. And this is their retirement fund. They're getting
mm-hmm.
to the age where they're ready to retire, and this has been their investment, that they know that when they retire that they'll have this money to live on. So you can't fault them for, you know.
They've been waiting for this.
And they've been so generous that you know, giving us a pledge of $235,000 towards the house. So they've been so patient with us. So, you know, they've been absolutely wonderful. And they come to our functions, and one of the Fletchers, Genevieve, is helping us with grant writing. So they're very concerned. They really want to see the house saved. They want to see it, you know, made into a living history museum. So I just like the people to know, you know, when people say, well, why didn't they, what? They couldn't. They've done everything they possibly can to help us. So, you know, they're good guys. They're all good guys.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you can't blame anybody for doing what's best for them.
Yes, yes.
Everybody is on a different, you know, why would they keep it if they are not able to upkeep it?
Exactly. It would have been too expensive at the time for them to restore it. So their idea was, well, we'll, you know, just leave it, and then eventually we'll tear it down and sell the property, because it's the property, financially, it's the property that's worth money. Now, emotionally and historically, the house is worth, it's priceless.
Oh,
but
yeah.
On the market, it's really not. So.
Now, the market will always give you a price.
Yes. Yes.
Well,
but,
I
you know,
think
that's an ideal location.
It is. It is. It's a beautiful location for a community center. I know that
yes.
You've had a couple of weddings there. So yes. Now we haven't talked about that, but we're really running out of time. And you have been beyond, I don't know, you've been amazing tonight to deal with two different shows and all the confusion we've had. But I want to make sure that everybody knows, number one, about the premiere, which is the very first time that anybody other than Jennifer, who created the film, will see it in its, because I haven't seen the final version.
Mm-hmm.
The first time anybody's going to see the final version and on a big screen.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
going to be at 6 p.m. on Saturday, January 11th, and today's the 9th, so that's right around the corner. At
yes.
Oaks 10 Theater in Melbourne, Florida. If you don't know the address, just Google it. We've got three tiers of pricing. I think $25, $35, and $50.
Yes.
Is that? And
that's correct.
Go to greengables.org to see what you get for each charitable
mm-hmm.
deduction
yes.
that you make. This is an opportunity for you to give a donation. You don't have to stop at the price of the ticket. Round it up, throw it, and, you know, make it, a, you know, if you can only afford $30, give them the $30. If you can afford $40, make the $35 ticket a $40 ticket. If you've got $50 per ticket, then try to make it $100. You're going to get some perks for that. You're going to get treated like royalty, red carpet, champagne, the whole works, but you're going to get to see a piece of history and be with people that are preserving it. Go to greengables.org or brownpapertickets.com to learn more about that. You can visit Forgotten Enchantress Film on Facebook. And I can't think of anything else we need to add. Can you?
Well, you can come visit Green Gables itself on Saturdays from 10 to 2.
Absolutely. So you're doing the open house before you're doing the premiere.
We are open every Saturday, no matter what. So we will be open the
wow.
day of the premiere. We'll be open from 10
wow.
to 2.
I'm impressed. you guys have more heart and soul than I can imagine. That's because I know what's involved in doing that, because the house is not always, it's not ready when the people show up. At 10 o'clock, you have to be there at what, 8:30, 9 o'clock to get it started?
Yeah, I mean, I usually get there about 8:30 because we put all the furniture back out on the porch. You know, we put out our wicker
mm-hmm.
furniture, set up the table for tea. And, you know, in an old house like that, every time you go in, you need to sweep. And it's a you know, we want it to be at its best all the time. So, and there's always
okay.
lots of little projects like weeding the garden and, you know, trimming trees and all sorts of things. You know, there's always little repairs that have to be made, just like in any house.
Now,
so,
when you have your open house, do you also do a tea party every time? Do you always have tea?
Well, we don't always have a tea party, but we always have some kind of refreshments on the porch. If it's a special occasion or if somebody has made an appointment with us, we have some people that call us and say, you know, my family is in town. We'd like to, you know, We'll have tea. We'll have tea and lavender cookies, or, you know, we had coffee and bagels the other day for somebody. So we're happy to do that if you call us and let us know that you have somebody special in town, or if you want to have an event there, we do
events. There's no admission.
Tribute dinners.
Oh, that would be cool.
There's no admission. We ask for a donation, and the suggested donation is $20 per family to tour the house. But there is no requirement. So that if you only have $2 and you put $2 in, we're thrilled to death. If you don't have anything, we still want you to come and see the house. So
because
it is just
the
donation, and it is tax deductible.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, it is. But those kind of things, those donations are what we use for our upkeep, so that we don't have to, you know, we don't have to touch the money that's going towards buying the house. We use the donations to, you know, pay our taxes and pay the lawn guy and pay the portlet people. And and nobody at Green Gables makes a dime. As a matter of fact, most of us spend quite a bit.
Yes, because I know anytime we've been there, you've always had, you know, snacks for us. I mean, I know we were working, but you've always gone above and beyond. And I know whose pocket that came out of. It wasn't Green Gables.
Well, we try to make it very hospitable, you know, so that people will feel welcome and enjoy it. And
it
you know.
What I love about going to Green Gables is you're not going to pass a vending machine.
That's right.
You know, there are no bottles and cans of Cokes and things lying around.
No, it's usually tea or water. When we have functions like during the Nativity, we had hot cocoa and cookies, all homemade. We try to do as much homemade as we can. Now, once in a while, you know, the bagels is definitely not homemade, but we have a partnership with Einstein's Bagels. They're very kind to us.
Yeah,
so
that's good.
You know, once in a while they'll donate things for our functions. Before we had our portlets, they were very kind to let us come in there and use their bathroom whenever we needed to. So they've been faithful partners for quite some time. So
I will tell you, you mentioned the cookies. Those were so good. What I did,
I'm glad you liked them.
Because it was right before Christmas, and I had not baked a single cookie, and I had my grandson and my mother-in-law coming to visit. So by the time everybody had cleared out and I was pretty sure that everybody had bought all the cookies they wanted or most of them, I saw the ladies packing up to go home. I just threw them a $20 bill and I said, how many can I get for this? And they gave me a container and filled it up with cookies because they didn't want to have to take them back home.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the nicest Christmas cookie way to do it. I love that. I think I'm going to do that every year. Next year I might come with $50 and get extra cookies and give them out as gifts, and people will think I'm a hero.
and all of them homemade. Every cookie that was homemade. So.
Yes, that was why I wanted to buy them, because I knew that they would be delicious. And if you ask me right now which one was my favorite, I couldn't tell you, but they were all out of this world. They were all made with love. I can tell that.
Yes, yes. They were made mostly by Melbourne Women's Club. That was their contribution.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
Well, it is now past 10:30, and we started this at 9:00. We were supposed to have been finished a half an hour ago. I appreciate you sticking in here with me, and for all of our listeners that are still here, I am so grateful that you came back and listened to the second show. We will have you back on the show again. And I know I told you earlier what date it was, but I've gotten so flustered I've forgotten. But you're coming back in March.
It is.
And we'll give...
March 12th.
March 12th. That's my oldest brother's birthday. I cannot forget that. But we will give everybody an update on how Forgotten Enchantress was received in the community and how the donations are going and... how much more we need, because we are raising $285,000 so that we can apply for a matching grant and buy this wonderful 123-year-old property and its green space and make magic for future generations.
Absolutely.
And with that, I'm going to say goodnight, Marion, and hit this little button over here that tells everybody who we are and what we do. So,
thank you, Marion. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for sticking in here with me, calling back.
No worries. And I'll see you Saturday.
Yes, you will. I'll be there.
Thank you for listening this evening. We're happy you chose to spend this time with us, and we hope you learned as much as we did.
Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
And if you'd like us to invite you or someone you know to speak right here, just go to beunique.org and contact us there.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that our newly branded podcast has so many global listeners and that our website and magazine receive thousands of visitors each month. Let's put your brand in front of all those people. Mary can share the demographics with you. Contact her through the website. That's BUNEKE.org.